Our speaker this morning, in my judgment, is one of the great men of the church. Educator, bishop, stake president, mission president, temple president, since 1951, assistant to the Quorum of 12, and coordinator of all LDS temples, of which we now have in operation 12. Brother Elri Christiansen is a man of great and warm testimony. Many of us have had an opportunity to meet him in the temple. Many young people feel very warm toward him because of the kindness extended to them when they went to the temple to be married. Brother Christiansen, you and your lovely wife are always welcome on this campus. We're pleased at this time to have you address us.
They always make you feel so welcome that you don't suffer quite as much as you think you're going to. And I love this setting. I love this campus. I love students, missionaries, and young people. And others. President Taylor, and President Crockett, and President Barrett, Dean Lloyd, President Hylison, who I admire, students, faculty, friends of the institution of the church. I come here in fear and trembling this morning, but with a desire to do my duty. Grateful for the music that has been rendered by this splendid chorus and in the direction of Brother McMurdy, and such appropriate songs. Come unto me and let there be life. And along with that, the helpful invocation of Brother Valentine. All this helps to make the setting. Without the setting, there's something lacking. We just returned from a visit to the Six Stakes in New Zealand and in Australia, and visiting the temple in New Zealand and in Hawaii, and holding meetings with missionaries, although we didn't visit the missions as we usually do. When I got home, I went to my desk Saturday night, and there was a letter from Brother Wilkinson telling me that I should be down here on the 14th. Speak to the students. While I feel honored at that, I always shrink from it. Try to make an excuse, but this time I couldn't find one good enough. And then I couldn't get Brother Wilkinson on the phone, so I just had to go ahead and do the best I could and try to think of something that might be helpful. I thought, well, I might talk about the temples and temple marriage, but you're all going there to be married anyway, so there's no need of talking about that. And these lovely temples in the islands, and those people who came there, group of Tongan people who came to the New Zealand temple and spent 2 weeks, and they told me they had sold practically everything they owned, except their own homes, and had saved for years to go there, but were happy and glad to do it. We met many of them. If there are any students from those islands, or from New Zealand, or from Australia, I'd be pleased to shake your hand after the meeting. I think I must have seen some of your parents, because they're all proud to say that they're attending the BYU. I know that you've all ridden in airplanes at 600 miles an hour, high enough so you can't see the water and worry about it. I tried to wonder why they flew at 41,000 feet, and then I remembered that I had been down under, and as we left down there, they have to get up high enough so that it won't be such a steep climb all the way back. So they go up 41,000 feet, and then they go on the level, I guess. Seemed like that. You've met with the people in those stakes. Those six stakes in those islands are doing marvelously well with local leadership. I was amazed. And to hear the young people give talks that they were assigned to give on topics that they were given to discuss was a thrilling thing. And to meet your people and your parents and your relatives and friends in those islands and see them anxious to hear the gospel principles taught, and then to meet with the missionaries and hear them and discuss with them their problems. It was all a great event in my life. But now that I'm here, may I just be privileged to attempt to say something about a subject that I've never heard discussed in public, and yet which I think is important to all of us. Time. The gift of time. Or the endowment of time. Tried to think through this a little bit the last day. Yesterday it was. I've for a long time been fascinated with this moving hand on a watch or a clock that persistently travels, never ceases. And I've always noted that the day dawns and time is relentless. It's a fascinating thing to think about. And it's certainly true that time and tide wait for no man. I remember in the old radio programs in the early days, there was a program, and I think it was a news broadcast, which the announcer said in the beginning, "Time marches on." And then at the end, I think he repeated it. And that was very impressive to me. And I thought about it. And after you get to be a half a hundred years old or more, you think about it and notice it much more than you do when you're less than that. And it seems that they speed it up just a little bit. Take a little out of each hour, each day. At least it seems that way. Well, time that is given to us is a blessing, God-given. And also, as someone said, it's a tyrant. As we go on in the years, time taxes our health and our limbs and our faculties. That's here. And our strength and even our features. But we all travel at the same rate. We all get older at the same rate. There's justice in this thing. And that's comforting to know that you're not moving along any faster in that direction and in that sense than anybody else. I think of time as an allotment to each of us, but of which none of us have too much. I think of time as an endowment of God, God-given, which the wise will cherish and which the foolish will waste. An endowment, God-given. Time is free, yet it is nevertheless one of the most precious possessions that we have and that we will ever own. Yet many of us have a tendency to waste it or to misuse it to some degree. You even hear people, when you ask them what they're doing, "Oh, I'm just sitting here killing time." Tragic thing to say, to admit, when it never ceases and when it is given for such a divine purpose. Yes, I like to think of time as an allotment or an available period during which each of us is expected to prepare himself. And that allotment varies with each one of us. And there is no assurance given as to when it ends. And that's what makes it so important to do something about it now. It is given to us as an available period in which we're expected to prepare ourselves by increasing our understanding of life and its purposes mainly. A time when we're expected to prepare by acquiring more knowledge, by developing wisdom, the good sense to do what is right and honorable, even though a person would like to do otherwise. Wisdom. I think that wisdom is mainly stems from a desire to do what's right. He that hearkeneth unto counsel is wise. This time is given us that we may develop this wisdom and this desire to hearken unto counsel and become wise. By increasing our faith in God and learning of Him and our relationship to Him, a period during which we may serve our fellow men and do good to them, a period in which we may become more tolerant, and that takes practice and effort, takes ability to become tolerant. When we may become more refined, I think that's a principle of the gospel, more patient, more forgiving, and more Christ-like. As he said, sanctify yourselves that your minds may become single to God. Time is a period in which we should use to develop a greater appreciation for the things that we consider to be ordinary. Appreciation. My, what a need there is for that in the hearts of each of us. We have so much for which we have paid so little. Some time ago, I read a story that had a profound influence upon me. I cannot recall the source nor the author. Anyway, it was about a young man who had committed a serious crime and was languishing in jail, awaiting execution in payment for the crime, if that will pay it. During his last night on earth, of course, he didn't sleep. And dawn found him standing at the window of his cell, holding the bars, looking out. He could see over the prison walls and behold the countryside round about. And the sky. And as the sky brightened with the dawning of the day, a change seemed to come over him. A change of values, a change of appreciation for what he had hitherto considered commonplace, unworthy of his notice. And he observed the rich brown earth, the leaves of the trees, and the bright green fields, and the sky. And he gripped the bars of his cell and stared intently at the scene which had lay before him, but which had been unnoticed through his lifetime. Tears came to his eyes, and he realized for the first time the glory and the magnificence of the world about him. And as the muffled footsteps of the jailers could be heard on their way to his cell, he still stood at his window, transfixed by the unspeakable beauty of the dawning of the day and the rising of the sun. Of course, the beauty and the wonder of it all had been there all during his 23 years. He had simply let time run out on him. Until now it was too late to fully enjoy it. And I doubt if he's the only one who has failed to make the most of his opportunities and to appreciate while there is still time to do so. Time is so fleeting, said Hans Christian Andersen, that if we do not remember God and learn of Him in our youth, age may find us incapable of thinking of Him. Ever since I have gotten into my later years, I have listened to the words of the songs that we sing in state conferences and sacrament meetings, the hymns. And lately this one has impressed me. Improve the shining moments. Don't let them pass you by. Work while the sun is radiant. Work, for the night draws nigh. We cannot bid the sunbeams to lengthen out their stay, nor can we ask the shadow to ever stay away. Time flies on wings of lightning. You cannot call it back. It comes and passes forward along its onward track. And if we are not mindful, the chance will fade away, for life is quick in passing. 'Tis as a single day. Improve the shining moment. In this you are secure, for promptness bringeth safety and blessings rich and pure, and so on. I thought of that a good deal. And how we fail to heed the thought that time flies on wings of lightning. Every time an hour goes by, so has an opportunity, or many opportunities. And I see and learn and hear of people sitting by television by the hour. And that's one of the greatest, most marvelous, miraculous things that has been brought into being in this generation. I still can't comprehend how a vision, how a picture, an image, and sound can pass through steel, brick, the air, noise, and yet come into that box and be seen. But as Benjamin Franklin said many times, there's moderation in all things. Should be. We should not spend too much time. I'm an advocate of selective television programs. I think they're wonderful, many of them. But I think we should not get married to them. One friend dropped in the house, and the wife came to the door and said, "Is your husband home?" And she said, "Who?" And she said, "He's Fred. The one you're married to." She said, "I'm not married to him. He's not married to me. He's married to that." Sitting in there by the television. And the same is true with children. If we can select for them proper use of time in which they could learn, it's a great educational facility. But to have them there by the hour and late into the night, seeing some of the things they see is not, I think, the proper use of time. Well, God gives us today to prepare, someone said, but He does not promise tomorrow for procrastination. Tomorrow cannot be assured. Today is ours. Today is mine. How can I best use it? Should be our thought. Yesterday is no problem. It's gone by forever. Tomorrow is no problem. It hasn't even come, hasn't even appeared, isn't even here. Today is the supreme moment. Now, I believe in planning for tomorrow, the future, and setting up objectives and determinations and planning what we will do when the next day dawns. But we should not just sit and plan at the expense of the achievements that ought to be accomplished today. I think of a man who they told me about in one of the stakes I was in not long ago. You know how we go out and try to activate the inactive, bring them along, get them warmed up and attuned while time lasts. One of the elders present told this story of a man that they had called on many times. Good man, had good intentions. And he welcomed them, listened to them, and he would usually say, "Well, I intend to. I'll do it. I'll come to church when I get straightened out." Then they'd go back another time, same story. "Well, when I get straightened out, I'll come there." And then he said, "I was called on to speak to that man's funeral. He was in church, and he was sure straightened out." But along the way, he had lost a lot of the precious things that time could have provided him in the way of preparation. You're fortunate to be here. It seems to me that life is a series of chapters, and chapters have a way of ending. Your time at the BYU will end. This school year will end. And you will leave here feeling that your time here has been used wisely, or you will leave with some misgivings about time being unprofitably used. Now we must have recreation and fun, diversion, but it also should be planned and scheduled and not overdone. I hope that you're grateful for these instructors that meet you every day. I wish that we could do it over again, some of us. I think I'd have greater appreciation. But I know that the ones I do appreciate, and the ones that I remember, and the ones that I extol when I talk about my school days, are those who held me to a high standard of achievement and didn't let me get by with anything less than that. I hope you appreciate it when they hold you to something and expect the best that you've got. But now why? Why are we so concerned about how our time is spent? Well, because we have a life to live, each of us. The future is ahead, and even eternity lies before us. And what we do here determines what we will be tomorrow and later and in the eternity. What we are to be, we are now becoming. That makes the time today very, very important to each one of us. We go out in life and we find it challenging. We find it competitive. And so in choosing a career, I would suggest, in order to get around this competition, in choosing a career for yourself, make it a tough one. And then you'll have much less competition. Don't be afraid of it. And I hope that you will go with oil in your lamps when your time is run out. Came to my desk the other day, a letter or a notation, memorandum about the number of unskilled workers in our state. May I refer to it? I checked on it again yesterday, and they told me that there are actually 23,000 unemployed, and there are 15,400 of those, January 1st, who have registered and applied for work. And they can't get work, and yet jobs are going begging because employers cannot find trained, skilled, and experienced workers. 4,000 openings, they said yesterday, await the skilled, the trained, the one who has made the best use of his time. Let me just read a paragraph or two. We are living in a changing world, this man said in his discourse, but we haven't learned yet to recognize the changes that are taking place in our occupations. We must get this information into the schools and the homes and into the hearts and the minds of the people. The Denver and Rio Grande Railroad observed that the industry does not have a very promising future for new jobs. In 1945, there were 1 4/10 million employees. And in 1959, there were only 815,000 employees, or a decrease of 42.6%. And this change has come about because of technical developments and automation. From 1 4/10 million employees to 815,000 with one railroad. 2.5 million workers will lose their jobs through automation and technical advancement in almost every area of business and industry, it is said. And finally, he concluded and said that the thing boils down to this. The unskilled and the untrained will very soon merge into one group, the unemployed. And so while you have this opportunity, don't waste time. Use it. Consider it a gift of God, a time when you can prepare so that you may avoid such things. I think that in a sense this institution and what it does for you is the mold into which your entire future is cast. It'll determine the kind of a husband you'll be, or the kind of a wife, or father, or mother, or citizen, or member of the church. You're determining that now. You're being shaped one way or another. Habits of indolence developed here on the campus are usually followed up by an inclination toward indolence later on. At the same time, habits of industrious labor, habits of self-discipline, formed while here, no doubt, will become a part of your makeup forever. In the words of Paul, "For this I say, he which soweth sparingly shall reap also sparingly. And he which soweth bountifully shall reap also bountifully." The gospel teaches us that knowledge, intelligently applied in our lives, is essential to progress and to salvation even. And we're taught this grand principle, that whatever principle of intelligence we attain to in this life, it will rise with us in the resurrection. And if a person gains more knowledge and intelligence in this life through his diligence and obedience than another, he will have so much advantage in the world to come. That's an immutable fact. Same thing is true with our inclinations. In the Book of Mormon, it says that we will, when we stand in the resurrection, have a bright recollection of all our guilt. I don't like that. And I think that wasting time is a sinful thing. And we'll have regrets. And regrets are something that are terrible to live with. I'm just pleading for you to make the best use of this opportunity and the time allotted you while here at this institution, to make a life for you and those that you will affect that will be of the best that you can make it. Time and opportunity are yours into which to gain knowledge and faith through obedience, in which to learn skills, techniques, professional understanding. And also, when we may learn to understand the interrelationships of presented facts in such a way as to guide us on our way to that certain goal which we all seek. In conclusion, I turn to the Doctrine and Covenants. This should be a happy day, a happy time. I think it is one of the most wonderful phases of our lives, time that we spend in these institutions. And so, as the Lord said through the prophet Joseph, I say to you, wherefore lift up your hearts and rejoice, and gird up your loins, and take upon you mine whole armor. Do all that he asks and requires, that ye may be able to withstand the evil day, having done all that ye may be able to stand. Stand therefore, having your loins girt about you with truth, having on the breastplate of righteousness, and your feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace, which I have sent mine angels to commit unto you, taking the shield of faith, wherewith ye shall be able to quench the fiery darts of those who doubt and would deceive. I've changed the wording there a little. And take the helmet of salvation and the sword of my spirit, which I will pour out upon you, and my word, which I reveal unto you, and be agreed as touching all things whatsoever ye ask of me. And be faithful until I come, and ye shall be caught up, that where I am, there ye may be also. To the actuality of this promise and the realization of it to those who will take upon them the whole armor by making use of their time in the preparation, I testify. I testify to the reality of God, to the truthfulness of the gospel which is taught here, and which has been restored in the fulfillment of prophecy, ancient and modern. And I testify to you that if we will let that be our guide, that we will have a desire to use time, and that it will be ours to be used more profitably than otherwise. May God bless you now. I pray humbly. In the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, amen.